Western Park 2020 for Business patron, Greg Dyke.
Good evening. My job is to, as you've heard, I'm a patron of the charity. Amongst a number of roles that I undertake, of course, the most famous at the moment is the chairman of the Football Association, but I also do own a number of hotels in the Sheffield area. I can get onto later how I managed to... It was a complete chance, but we'll come on to that later. But Western Park Cancer Charity is a cause close to the hearts of many of the staff in my hotel businesses, so, and they have chosen to support the vital work of the charity this year. And following this initiative, which came from our staff, I've been able to see firsthand the significant difference that Western Park Cancer Charity makes for cancer patients in the Sheffield City region and beyond. I recently saw some figures about the causes of death in a community in Britain 100 years ago. Cancer was not in the top five. But of course, times change. We've got cures for many of the things people were dying from 100 years ago. And today, you know, it's hardly one of us, I think, who's not affected in their lives by cancer. And as I understand the figures, one in three, maybe one in two of us at some stage in our lives are going to get cancer. But I doubt whether there's one of us who hasn't had a member of the family, a friend, a work colleague who hasn't had cancer. In the past year, two of my closest friends have contracted the disease. Sadly, one died, one is hopefully battling on. But with the incidence of cancer still on the rise, the need for this charity to invest in improved cancer treatments and to support pioneering cancer research in Sheffield and the area around has never been greater. And in my experience as a business leader, I think that businesses both have a responsibility to work in partnership with their local community, but also I think they want to. I think the sort of belief that businesses think they're not part of this just isn't my experience. So that's why I'm pledging my support to this charity. But it's also why we're pledging the support of my Sheffield-based companies to this worthwhile campaign. And I urge you to do the same, but I shall come back a bit later. But now I'd like to introduce Professor Wall, who's going to say a few words.
Thank you very much indeed. And I'd like to welcome everybody to Western Park Hospital, and in particular to the Cancer Research Unit here that was, as you can see, recently refurbished with the help of the Cancer Charity and Westfield Health and Yorkshire Cancer Research, and we're very grateful for that. As you've already heard, and as everybody knows, cancer touches all of us. We all have friends and family members with cancer, and as we head towards 2020, up to half of us will experience cancer ourselves, but of course, many more patients are being cured. In Sheffield, we're very proud of our industrial heritage, but that also casts a shadow for us in terms of the cancer burden that our patients have. Ex-miners, ex-smokers, ex-steel workers who may contract lung cancer, mesothelioma, many years after their exposures, and so we're continuing to see that legacy of Sheffield's industry. But here, Western Park Hospital is a beacon of hope for many people in Sheffield and from the surrounding area, where they look to us for better treatments, better understanding of the biology of cancer, better care for survivors of cancer. And I think that the charity has been a huge force for good in supporting research as well as service developments across the trust. It's a very exciting time for us in cancer research. We're understanding more and more about the biology of cancer. We have new drugs, targeted agents coming through. And here in the Cancer Research Unit, we want to test those new agents. We want Sheffield people, the people of South Yorkshire, to have access to the new agents as they come through. We're developing with our colleagues in the university tests to try and identify the right patients for the right treatment. We're moving increasingly towards personalised medicine, where we look at the individual characteristics of the patient and the tumour to select the right treatment for them. And that's our aim in this department, to link the university with the trust. We want to work together with the patients, our NHS colleagues, our university colleagues, industry and charity to improve the results of cancer treatments through research. So I'm delighted to see you all here today, and thank you all for your support.
Thank you, Penella. My name's Sam Kennedy, and I'm the director of Western Park Hospital Cancer Charity. I was thinking over the weekend of one patient in particular whose story at the moment compels me to do what I do, the work that I do. For those of you who may have been in the large committee room and watched the film just now, you may have seen this young lady, Amy Usher. Amy completed her first year at university, but then was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer and received treatment and support from the specialist teenage team at Western Park Hospital. Amy was front of mind for me because last week I met with her parents to discuss how the £50,000 which family and friends had raised over the past 18 months might be invested in a memorial fund, as it's almost a year since Amy sadly lost her battle with cancer at the age of 22. Now, the staff at Western Park Hospital do an excellent job at providing the very best treatment through the NHS to patients like Amy. As a charity, we complement that which is provided by the NHS to work in partnership to provide a better life for those living with cancer and beyond. And that may mean building more comfortable treatment areas like the one you find yourself in now. It might be the funding of specialist workers who work with teenagers to help them grow into healthy and happy adults. Or it may be bereavement support to families who've lost a loved one. These services are very important in supporting families like Amy's, so that we ensure we're not just treating the disease, we're actually treating the person. It's important that we continue to fund initiatives like these. However, we regularly have conversations with family members who come into our office and want to leave a donation, usually because a loved one has recently died, and we say to them, what would you like to be achieved with this donation? What would you like to make happen? And the answer is usually the same, and it still surprises me. People say, we don't want another family to go through what we've gone through. And I always find this response quite humbling, that people can show such altruism at a time that they're feeling so raw themselves. And the best way that we can help prevent families from having to undergo similar pain is for us to invest in research. That's what we do as a charity, and that's what we'll continue to do. Now, we're incredibly fortunate here in the Sheffield City region. We have one of the world's leading universities here in this city. We also have one of only four specialist cancer centres in England. This provides a crucible for the very best in cancer research. This is research taking place here in Sheffield, which not only contributes to the global fight against cancer, but is delivering improvements in treatment and diagnosis to patients right now in our local communities across the region. Through our 2020 for Business campaign, we want to raise an additional £1 million from the corporate sector. This money will be invested in helping us to continue to deliver excellence in cancer research, led by experts like Professor Wall. Like most industries, cancer research is a global market, and we need to retain competitive edge to keep the best talent here to the benefit of our patients, who are our employees and our loved ones. We will support the talented young researchers we have, ensuring they receive the training, the resources, have the facilities to help us to continue to retain the research talent which we've grown in South Yorkshire over the years, effectively to make the Professor Walls of tomorrow. And I know that we have the people assembled in this room today to help us to achieve this challenge. You are the business leaders of the region, the people with the talent, the resources and the capabilities and the vision to throw your weight behind this campaign. It was Martin Luther King who said, "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands at moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at a time of challenge and controversy." As you heard from Professor Walt, we all have a great challenge ahead of us. But I'm confident that with your help, we can meet and even overcome this and help many more families, families like Amy's, to stay together for longer. Thank you, and I'd like to now pass over to my colleague, Tina Harrison. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. I'm absolutely delighted to see so many of you here tonight. I hope you're enjoying the evening so far. And I do apologise for this whistle-stop tour in this room, in that room, in another room, but we're very tight for time. First of all, I'd like to take a moment to say thank you to some of those who've contributed to the success of this evening, as without their help, we wouldn't have been able to put on this event. So our sincere thanks go to Agra's Managing Director, Mohammed Aslam, MBE, for kindly supplying such wonderful food and drinks, not only for tonight, but they've pledged their support for the whole of this campaign. Thank you. Our sincere thanks also go to Wildfire for kindly supplying the special and dramatic effects that you've seen and heard this evening. And they too are not only supporting this evening, but for the duration of the campaign. Thank you very much indeed. We are a bit limited as to what we can do here at Weston Park tonight, but watch out at the next update meeting, which will be held sometime in September. Well, you've heard from Professor Wall and Sam Kennedy explaining the facts and the need, so now we come on to our goal. And I really hope that you will make this your goal too, because together we are definitely stronger. We often get people asking how their donation can make a difference. And of course, as you know, every penny builds up. So every penny counts. And we're really counting on you being willing to make an annual pledge of just £1,000 for the next 5 years. This will help us achieve our goal to raise £1 million by 2020. You'll be investing in the future of tomorrow, and ultimately investing in the future of your loved ones, your friends, your colleagues and employees, should they need the services of Weston Park Hospital. It's really very simple. All we need you to do is sign up. And in return, we'll hold two very unique and quirky update meetings a year. They will be different at interesting locations. The launch is here tonight, but we've found some great locations throughout the city. There will be famous keynote speakers. This is for senior management, and it will be interactive. Hope you enjoyed the quiz. You will hear tips and suggestions relating to business. We do understand your needs, and we will be updating you on developments here at Weston Park and how we're investing your money over the years. And I guarantee you, you will want to attend these meetings. We are absolutely committed to making this happen. It has to happen. It's going to be big, huge, massive. I really hope we've won you over. And now I'm dying to share some amazing news with you that I was told this evening. Westfield Health has very kindly offered to match fund the first 20 sign-ups to this campaign. So thank you very much, Mr. Graham Moore, and all at Westfield Health for making this very generous donation. This means if 20 companies sign up, and I think we've got, we're hoping for about 50 to 100 this year, but if 20 sign up already, that means we'll already have raised £40,000 towards our goal. Wouldn't that be amazing? So, is anybody here brave enough to take this leap of faith and say they're in? Yeah. Yeah. Owen Mitchell, thank you very much. Shout out the name of your company. Thank you very much, the Burley Group. Napoleons, thank you very much. Four Recruitment, thank you. Ford Recruitment, thank you very much.
Buckingham Insurance.
Wow, that is absolutely fantastic. Thank you very much indeed. The registration desk will be manned as soon as you leave this and the formalities are over. So I urge you to go and sign up. And please tell your fellow friends in business. Tell them all about our club. So, let me take you back to last December. I was delighted when I received an invitation to the opening of the Best Western Cutlers Hotel in the centre of Sheffield and was introduced to Greg Dyke. I launched straight in as I knew I'd only get the one chance. Those who know me, that's just the way I roll. And I asked him if he would consider becoming a patron of this new campaign we'd be launching to raise £1 million. And would he consider attending one of our events? Greg doesn't live in Sheffield, so I knew this was a big ask. I was prepared for, well, leave it with me and I'll consider it, see what I can do. But such is his interest in Sheffield, he not only said yes there and then, he committed to attending this event. And he's honoured absolutely everything he's promised to us. And for that, I thank you, Greg, very, very much indeed. Yeah. He is a household name, a journalist, broadcaster, former Director General of the BBC and Chairman of the FA. He's been in the news every day for the past 2 weeks. There will be a Q&A session, but please welcome back on stage to hear about the man himself, Mr. Greg Dyke.
Well, thank you, Tina. I always have to move the mic down a bit, you know, because in fact, once when I was at the BBC, I got invited to a thing at the Palace, and they said to me, would I mind making the presentation to the Queen? And I said, well, yeah, why? So I gave her this strange piece of broadcasting equipment. She had no idea what it was, and I had no idea what it was. But anyway, I gave it to her. We said, and came off. She went, and I called the PR over, and I said, why do you want me? And they said, we needed somebody short. thank you, Tina. Tina's quite effective. I wasn't given much of a choice about whether I was going to become a patron, but then that's all right. I see we had six. I think we had six companies we already agreed. Well, Saxon Hotels will be the seventh. So, Mr. Moore, I'm afraid that's 7,000 it's cost you so far today. So they said to me, well, could you come and just say, who are you? Where did you come from? Well, you can tell from my accent that I'm a Londoner. But I became an adopted Northerner a long time ago now. As a 24-year-old, I went to the University of York and had three of the best years of my life. And then in later years I became Chancellor of the University, so I was Chancellor for 11 years until last summer. So I grew to like, really, you know, as a Londoner who'd never really been north and thought it was all coal mines until I came here, I fell in love with the north of England. And so when I got the opportunity to buy into a hotel up in Sheffield, I did, largely. Like much of my life, it was chance. Somebody asked me to lend them some money, I did. I therefore ended up owning half of Mosborough Hall Hotel, only to discover the bloke who owned the other half was an outright crook. So I decided we'd get rid of him, and I took it all over. That was 15 years ago now. Since then, we've now got four hotels here. As you said, the latest was the opening of Cutler's. Those who haven't been to Cutler's, please go and try it, because we bought it off the receiver, so you can imagine it had a pretty rough old time. I think we've paid most of the debts now. But we've spent quite a lot of money refurbishing the whole place. So if you get the opportunity, go and have a look. So in my decision in my life that actually I grew more and more tired with how much of the resources in this country were being spent in London. So when I was Director General of the BBC, I took the decision to move a third of the BBC to Salford, which everybody said couldn't be done. Everybody said that you couldn't run a news operation, you couldn't do that from the, look at it, perfect. And we particularly moved BBC Sport there because the head of sport at the time came from Burnley. And then when I became chairman of the British Film Institute, I always remember going for the interview, and they asked me a question. The first question, I said, well, you're not really the British Film Institute, are you? I said, you're the London Film Institute. You know, how much of your money goes outside the rest of it? So, and they gave me the job, which I was quite surprised. But we have put a lot of resources, thankfully, outside London. And a few years ago, we also became the distributor for lottery money for film. And we've continued to push this outside of London. And it's always a struggle in London, because London does think it's the only thing that exists in the world. Of course, when you come to football, it probably is. No, that's a joke. Although, this isn't... Actually, what I found interesting about coming to Sheffield is that of all the places I've ever been, I have never met rivalry like there is between the two football clubs. I mean, it is quite remarkable. I mean, I lived in Newcastle for one time in my life, where there was an obsession about football, but it wasn't like Sheffield, because they thought something were irrelevant, where here there is that real battle. I mean, I've seen fights in our hotel over just between the two supporters. So my background, I was 30 years, and we will turn over to a question and answer in a moment, but I was 30 years in the television industry. I joined when I was 30, and I ended up running the BBC. I left in controversial circumstances over some of our coverage of the Iraq War, where a bunch of gutless BBC governors decided they'd get rid of me, because rather than get rid of Mr. Blair, which was not within their power, but they could have at least supported us, because of course, as we all know now, we were right that that the government sexed up the case for war. Anyway, I left. By then I was in my sort of mid-50s, and I thought, what do you do now? So I did what most politicians do. You know, I announced that I was now going to spend more time with my family. What I discovered after a few months is that my family didn't want to spend more time with me. So instead I got into the sort of fairly eclectic life I lead now. People call it plural. You know, I've gone plural. What it basically means is unemployed. But I got into the sort of life I've got now, which has meant I became Chancellor at York. It means I became chairman of the British Film Institute. I'm chairman of Ambassador Theatre Group, those sorts of things. And I ended up, in that time, owning Mosborough Hall and getting into the hotel business. But of course, I'm probably best known, as was pointed out earlier, for football. And of course, I've been a lot on the television in the last couple of days, last few days, because FIFA has got itself a new president. Now, I got a lot of publicity because I was not a fan of Mr. Blatter's, which is just as well, because neither is anybody else in this country. In fact, when I go to football matches now, fans stop me and want to shake my hand, just because they think I got rid of Mr. Blatter. And I say, no, you've got to understand, I think the FBI had a bit more to do with it than I did. But this weekend I'm going to a two-day event in Cardiff, which is called IFAB. And IFAB are the people who set the rules for football. And they're basically, it's all based in history and tradition. They're the four English football associations and FIFA. And of course the president turns up. So we've got the new president coming this weekend, which will be a relief, because last year we had Sepp Blatter, who I'd already managed to upset. And I turned up at this, and I'd gone to the medics amongst you were very pleased with me. I'd managed 2 months without alcohol. I'd stopped drinking on January the 1st, and this was February the 27th, and I turned up for this dinner only to find I was sitting next to Sepp Blatter. And I just thought, bugger this, and I drank a bottle of So we've now elected a new president of FIFA. It's an easy job, really. He's only got to overcome 40 years of corruption. He's only got to come... I mean, there are so many issues in FIFA, you can't believe it. But he is, I think, a fairly straight bloke, although you never know in football. You know, I've now told the head of international relations at the FA, stop bringing foreign dignitaries around to meet me, because the last three I met are all in jail. You know, it is a strange world, football. So, in the time I've been chairman of the AFL, I mean, we've done a couple of things, one of which is particularly pertinent here in Sheffield. The first thing I did was set up a commission where we tried to say, okay, we have a problem in this country. We have the best league in the world, probably. If you go anywhere in the world, people watch the Premier League. But because of that and the amount of money, it does mean that we are down to only 30% of the players playing in English. And I think that's a problem. But I think a bigger problem is we now have very good youth structures in most clubs, but the chances of those kids getting into the first team are so low. I saw some figures the other day that showed that 70% of the kids who sign at 16 for one of the Premier League clubs sign as an apprentice at 16 are not playing football by the time they're 20. They're actually out of the game altogether. Now, these are the kids who have been told since that they were that high that they were stars. They've been brought in, they're taken into these incredible facilities, they are trained, and then they never get anywhere near the first team. And that, I think, is, there's a whole combination of reasons for it, but I think it does mean we're losing a generation of kids, and we are not, you know, it was never obvious, it was never easy to get into the first team coming through the youth side, but it's incredibly difficult now, in club after club. In fact, I deeply upset Manchester City when I suggested that perhaps it was time they played some of their kids, because if you look at the Manchester City side at Wembley on Sunday when I was there, there was one English player and he didn't come through their youth team at all, structure at all. And the irony you've got now is that the sides that spend the most on their youth teams are the ones that are least likely to play the kids. So the best kids are being paid vast sums of money to go to a Chelsea or a Manchester City, and they've got no chance of getting a game. We're trying to do something about that. The other area was about grassroots football. It's quite clear in this country that we are miles behind not having enough facilities. And we decided to do something about that. And we've started, interestingly, here in Sheffield. Largely because I thought that would get more people to go to my hotels. it just so happened that we developed this thing called Park Life, where we could spend a significant amount of money on all-weather pitches, and the people who were fastest and were in quickest and were most enthusiastic were Sheffield Council. So we went with them, and there are three different centres now being built. And I hope they work, because it's a pilot that we can then roll out across the country. And we've put quite a lot of money in, and that's a good idea. Now, that's me. I was supposed to talk for 5 minutes. I've probably gone off a bit longer, and I'm supposed to take questions. So we've got 5 minutes for questions, I'm told. So, any questions?
Tell us about Man United as well, when you're in Man United.
Tell you about Manchester United.
Man United board, when you're on the
board.
I'm
like many Londoners, I support Manchester United. And I was on the board of Manchester United. I was on the board of Manchester United actually when Rupert Murdoch tried to buy the club. And I was the one person who opposed, which was in itself fun. But the best thing about being at Manchester United is I was in the dressing room the night in Barcelona, the night Manchester United won the treble. And when you look back in your life, you know, I'm now quite an old bloke, and you look back at your life and there's some big days when your kids were born and the rest of it. But I have to say, being there when they won the treble that night was one of the great nights, although I would never quite tell my wife that.
Would you ever go for FIFA presidency?
Would I go for FIFA presidency? No. I'm leaving the FA in the summer. I mean, football is strange. People hang on for many, many years. I mean, if you go to the FA, the FA Council, 10% of its membership is over 80. But in truth, I think you've got to accept as you get older that in the end you move aside and let other people come through. And I think that about lots of areas. And it's no surprise to me that my generation have fixed it. So, I mean, we were the baby boomers, and I think we fixed society very much in our interest, and I think it's time we moved aside. Yeah, there was a question at the back.
Yeah, you might have already answered it. I was going to ask, what was your best day ever at work?
My best day ever at work? Well, I didn't count being at Manchester United at work. Oh, God, the best day. Best day ever at work. Well, the best job, if you come in the television industry, is being a producer. It's better than being director general. If you're running your own show, and you never know if it's going to work. And I remember I was launching a new show in London. The pilot was a disaster. We did three pilots of disaster. One of them, a monkey escaped and ended up hanging around the bar. Just like, it was like one of those great disasters in your life. And the show went out and it was sensational. Everything worked, every single bit of it worked. We got massive ratings and you think, it doesn't really get better than that, does it? So, I mean, if you're in the television industry, I mean, the trouble was I went into management too early. I look back now, I wish I'd stayed for another 5 years as a producer, because that's what it's about.
Over here. If it wasn't for Iraq, what would you have liked to have done at the BBC after moving to Manchester?
Well, we'd done a massive culture change programme at the BBC. After I left the BBC, one of the things I also did was do a lot of lecturing on leadership, and largely because on the day I left, I got, you know, a lot of my staff walked out, and I got 6,000 emails from people saying I'm sorry. Although I have to tell you, the favourite of my emails was the one that I got 6,000 saying, "It's really sad you're gone." And I got one that just said, "Fuck off, Doug, I never liked you anyway." So, which warmed me a bit. We were halfway through a culture change programme that then got lost, and we were making a difference. And what it convinced me was that in an organisation even employing 30,000 people, you could, if you as the leader spent enough time, you could change the culture of the organisation so that the people working there felt part of it. And we had in the staff survey, we had a question like, one of the questions was, do you feel valued by the BBC? And we went from 27% to 60-odd% in 3 years, just by working at it, just by getting out and talking about it. And what was interesting, involving all the staff in it, and what really interested me was the experience of the staff most likely to get involved were young and were women. And I would like to have had another 3 years before. I wouldn't have stayed any longer than that because it was pretty demanding, but I'd like to have spent another 3 years working on the culture of an organisation, because instead I left and the thing got lost really, and people went back to, and this is what I used to go around lecturing about. I used to do quite a lot in the health service for this, you know. I spent a year of my life wandering around the health service at one time for the last Labour government, when they still liked me, looking at the patient's charter. And I get fascinated by how you run. How do you run an organisation of this size and this scale? And the only conclusion I reached was exactly the same conclusion I reached in television, and that is, you had to put the practitioners in charge. That actually, a thing called management in organisations where, in creative organisations, which is what the health services, is quite difficult. Whereas when we did the big culture change programme at the BBC, we put the head of drama in charge of it because she had credibility. Whereas the head of HR, much as, you know, that we wasn't going to ever have that credibility. And I think I came to the same conclusion about the health service, that in the end, you've got to put the medics right up there, even though a lot of them don't want to be there. But that's how you give it credibility. I forgot what your question was now. But that's what I'd like to have done more than the BBC. I'd like to have carried on the culture change program.
Unfortunately, we don't have any more time for questions because Greg does have a train to catch. So let's put your hands together.